You know, I want to say some things before we start here. First is we talk about these two different realms. I know there's people in here who are in both of those realms, either abandoned orphans or treasured children. And there's also people in here who have received Jesus, other people who have not. And I just want to say up front that normally I am thinking uniquely about people who are in here who are a bit skeptical about the Bible, not sure they believe in it, not sure that Jesus is any different than Buddha, Muhammad. And so I'm trying to oftentimes give data, anecdotes, support to help that mindset. And today I'm going to say a lot of things that if you're in that camp is going to be difficult for you, because I want to primarily talk to people who would say, yeah, I'm on the Jesus page, but man, I'm not sure that I'm understanding certain things. So I would talk differently if I knew exactly where you are. Just give me a little grace, and no matter where you are, you're going to grow, I think, in the midst of today and the rest of our series. It's a difficult weekend for me. Yesterday was actually been a difficult week for me. Difficult weekend, and especially yesterday was a very difficult day for me. I rarely perform funerals. I did one yesterday. It was for a person who's had a massive impact on my life and yours as well, if you know him or not. His name is Gil Hopkins. He's 85, and he died last week. And Gil, I got to know when I first came to Cincinnati. 11 people invited me here to start the church, and I started gathering people to the core group, and I got his name from a friend of mine in Pittsburgh. I sat down with him, and I told him my story at Indigo's in Hyde Park about how I went from going from the religion of Christianity to relationship with Christ. And I told him the person who helped me through that process, his name was Denny Patton. And he said, Denny Patton, he said, I actually led Denny to Christ. Here in my new city was actually my spiritual grandfather. I came to realize that Gil, and I noticed this just in what I've lost this last week. I lost a grandfather. I lost a brother. I lost a friend. I lost a warrior. He was more committed and loyal to me than anybody I've ever encountered except my wife. Amazing, amazing man. I remember one story was, I heard this story secondhand. He was in a meeting, and they were talking about various things, and he was taking up a minority position. He was in the minority, and I don't even remember who was in the meeting or what the topic was, but he was in the minority, and someone said, well, that's probably what Brian would believe. And the meeting continued on, and he still was in this position. And finally, someone said, well, you're just saying that because you're loyal to BT. And he blurted out, you're damn right I'm loyal to BT, always will be. And he just kind of shut the meeting down. I was like, ooh, you know. It was very visceral inside. I lost a warrior. And worst of all, I lost a father. I lost a father. You know, fathers can be ridiculed. They can be devalued. They can be lost. They can be undervalued. They can never be replaced. And part of why he had such a big impact on my life is because I actually, unless I'm very careful, function as an abandoned orphan. Actually, all of us in here have been orphans at least once. I've been abandoned twice. I've been orphaned twice. My first time I was orphaned was by birth. Actually, the Bible says that you and I are born affected with sin and separate from God. Every last person on the planet, according to the Bible, is born orphaned from God, is born disconnected from God. So I was born orphaned as a result of my sinfulness, and I was orphaned when my biological father never showed up in my life. I've been abandoned, I've been orphaned twice. All of us in here have at least been orphaned once. It's part of the human condition. And when you understand this, this is not a way right now, I'm not trying to judge anybody who believes this or that. I'm just trying to give you some handles that I promise you are true in your life. They just are. Just stay with me. You're going to see this. This is actually the way it plays out in your life. And one of the ways that you start to see this is just noticing how people behave, noticing how we behave. So oftentimes operating is an abandoned orphan instead of a treasured child. Last week we had a bunch of different things in the program that paralleled the different ways that abandoned orphans operate and that the treasured children operate. And abandoned orphans are simply just normal, just the normal way. It is our default mode. And when you start to see these, your life starts to make sense, and you can even start to notice why some people are the way they are. It's actually given me the capacity to extend people a lot of grace who annoy me. It's because they're acting the way that you would normally act if you feel like you are alone, like everything depends on you, like it's about your performance, like God doesn't approve of you, like forgiveness is always conditional. It helps you give grace to people who have difficulties. All of us do. Helps you understand other folks, such as perhaps Demi Moore. Demi Moore, she's undergone a rough go with Ashton Kutcher not doing her right. And this is a woman who's got a pretty interesting life. And she had an interesting quote in Bizarre magazine that I actually thought was bizarre. Here's what she said. "I used to think that what scared me was the idea of being abandoned until someone said to me, only children can be abandoned. Adults can't be abandoned because we have a choice. Children don't have a choice. So I started to rethink. Okay, it's not that. What's the underlying thread that really scares me? I think what scares me is having the courage to reach my potential, is not having the courage to reach my potential." Now, I don't know Demi Moore. I have no idea what's going on in her heart. I have no idea where she is with God. That's not my place to judge at all. As far as I know, she's amazing, and her and God are incredibly tight. So please don't, I'm not trying to pick apart at who she is. I'm just, let's evaluate that quote, okay? She says, "I've always been afraid of being abandoned. I felt I've been alone." That's been in her. She says, it's always in there. But then someone says, no, it can't be that. What it must be is you just haven't reached your full potential. And she falls prey to the pop spirituality of today, the Oprahfication of our understanding of God, the all religions are all the same, the God loves you just the way you are, you don't have to change your thing. She says, that must be, that's right. I don't feel abandoned. I haven't reached my full potential. That's the problem. Can I just say, if that's her problem, then we are all screwed, every last one of us, because if the way you and I are to feel better is by reaching our full potential, talk about slavery. I mean, if anybody has reached their full potential, it has to be Demi Moore. I mean, come on. If she hasn't reached potential enough to feel fulfilled, none of us will ever feel fulfilled. I mean, let's think about it. She has about any dude she wants, or could have about any guy she wants. She's in amazing shape. She has gobs of money. She has fame. She has fortune. And you're not reaching your full potential? I'm screwed, because I will never have that. I will never have that. Let me just ask you to consider that maybe her initial inclinations were right, that maybe she was tapping into something that all of us, by nature, feel abandoned, that we feel orphaned. In the book of John, chapter 1, verse 11 to 13, it says this. All you, I'm going out of order, it's coming. John chapter 1, verse 11 to 13, it says, maybe over here. There it is, right there. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. See, this is communicating that we are not born children of God. Some become children of God. When you receive Jesus, you become a child of God. Now, this doesn't mean that God doesn't have utter compassion, utter care for people, that all people, no matter who you are, no matter what you believe, God holds you in an unbelievable high regard. It doesn't mean that all people aren't created in the image of God. It doesn't mean all of that. None of that. It just means that we're born separated from God, and there's a moment when you get adopted into the family of God. There's a moment where you receive that. And this is a normal thing that actually goes throughout the entire Bible. It's not just one verse. I'll show you a couple more in a moment. Now, Jesus actually is a unique deal. He's fully man, fully God at the same time. He's got a different deal going on. So he's different from us, yet at the same time, he's very similar to us because God comes in the flesh. And he has an amazing day, actually his best day. I believe it's the best day of his life. What do you think that might be? Some might say, well, probably when he got an adrenaline surge speaking to mass amounts of people. Others might say, no, gosh, it had to be when he healed people. Talk about a power trip. Heal somebody, all of a sudden they can see. Awesome. There was a lot of great days in Jesus' life. I actually think his greatest day comes from the book of Matthew chapter 3. It's actually communicated a number of different times in the Bible. Here's what it says. "And when Jesus was baptized, immediately he went up from the water, and behold, the heavens were open to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest on him. And behold, a voice from heaven said, 'This is my beloved Son, with whom I'm well pleased.'" what's happening is his cousin John the Baptist, is baptizing people, and this is not the same kind of baptism that many people undergo today. It's a bit different. It's something that God prompts him to do, and many Jews follow through on, signifying, I'm being baptized, and I'm washing away the sin, my life, my rebelliousness. And so a lot of people were thinking, hey, this would be a good idea to do. I'm going to do this. Now, Jesus, because he's fully God and fully man at the same time, he doesn't have the sin problem going on. I mean, that's not part of his deal. But why does he get baptized? He gets baptized because he's identifying with the people he's called to. He is a Jew, and he's called to them, so he goes through it to identify with them. And while he does, he hears very, very clearly his heavenly Father say, this is my Son, in whom I'm well pleased. That's my boy. This is my Son, in whom I'm well pleased. I believe this is the best day of Jesus' life. I believe that any of us who have had a father put his hand on our shoulder and look at us and say, let me tell you something, son, daughter, I am so happy with who you've turned out to be. I am thankful for you. You've done well. You make me happy. Man, until you have that, there is something that is missing. There's something about the power of a dad. Now, some of us in here are going, no, there's not. There's nothing. Yeah, I know you feel that way because your dad was awful. That's why you feel that way. It's true. The reason we have a hard time in the Bible with these masculine concepts for God being called a father is because our earthly father has been awful. Our earthly father has been absent. Our earthly father either has physically abandoned us or he has emotionally abandoned us. And so as a protection mechanism to protect ourselves from that wound, we wall ourselves off and sort of have an attitude towards any paternalistic language of who God may be in the Bible. And all I'm trying to say is there is a power for a dad authenticating a son and a daughter. And if you only have a mom, I'm not saying you can't get authenticated. I'm not devaluing moms at all right now. I'm just asking us to recognize, isn't it true that dads can devastate us more than mothers? That dads just build us up in a unique, there's something powerful about that. And Jesus hears that from his Father. He hears his Heavenly Father, this is my Son, in whom I'm well pleased. And here's the thing. God would say to all who would be adopted into his family, you are my treasured child, in whom I'm well pleased. You're treasured. You're in my family. I approve of you. Now, it's interesting that verse is often translated, in whom I'm well pleased. An orphan reads that, and what he hears is, okay, Jesus has done a good job the first 30 years of his life, and so God's saying, okay, based on your performance, I now approve of you. I am pleased. And that's not it at all. Jesus hasn't performed any miracles up to this point. He's performed no miracles. He's performed no amazing teachings. What God is saying, in and of your identity, because you and I are one, I am pleased. Not because you perform, but you make me happy. That actually can be another translation. This is my Son who gives me pleasure. Do you feel that when you're around God, that he's just happy? Do you feel like when you come into a place like this, you're entering a place where you're going to sense more of God's happiness, or do you come into a place like this going, okay, I need to accommodate what happened last night. I need to take care of some things that happened in my life. It's been a rough week, so I need to get to church. It's like kind of what an orphan feels like. Okay, I've been bad, now I got to kind of come back and level the playing field a little bit. I have to make God be happy by going to church, whatever brand it is, versus walking in this light levity of, God, you just approve of me. I bring you pleasure. You're pleased with me. Amazing. That when you come to that part of taking on willingly the identity that you are a treasured child, things start to change. They don't necessarily change when you say the sinner's prayer. They don't necessarily change when you get baptized. And those are wonderful things. Please do that. But those things just signify, hopefully, what's happened in the eternal realm. A core shift in your identity is happening. No longer needing to earn, no longer needing to impress, no longer needing to outdo somebody else, but to bask and operate out of the pleasure of God. Now, that this is two unique and distinct realms, and that your default realm is abandoned orphan. I'm not trying to put anybody down who's in that realm. I'm just trying to say, hey, there's a new way. There's a new way. Just to show that this is a through line that goes throughout the Bible, here's another couple examples here. The book of Romans chapter 8, for all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, then heirs. This verse talks about being a son. A lot of translations will say sons and daughters, or they'll say children of God. I don't have a problem with those translations. They're trying to make it understandable for us. But it's interesting that it actually says sons in the original because it's communicating something in the ancient first culture context that actually happens still in many cultures today, and that is that the son is the one who is the treasured child. The son is the one who gets the lion's share of the inheritance because all the family wealth goes to him, and he is supposed to keep the family vision on track and ongoing. And so when the Bible talks about we are all sons of God, it's talking to men and women. It's actually not sexist at all. It's actually coming against the sexism. It's coming against the sexism of that time that puts women in a lesser place. And so what it's saying is, when you were a treasured child, when you've been in Christ and adopted into the family, God looks at you, whether you're male or female, as the eldest son. You are the son. And there's two different realms, not just the orphan realm or the treasured child realm, but that one talks about another one, this being synonymous over here with the slave, orphan child, a slave, I'm slaving away, or treasured child and the son. And it says when you are in the treasured child of God camp, you have an inheritance. There is wealth that God has for you that is stored up, and it's not just financial wealth that some of us have right now. It's a wealth of wisdom. It's a wealth of mercy. There's an inheritance, and we may not be getting it all right now, but it is there because it's part of our family heritage. Another example of this thinking, Galatians 4, so that we might receive adoption as sons, and because you're sons, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our heart. Whoever's received Christ, we receive the Holy Spirit. Not Buddha, not Islam. This is a unique thing here. God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you're no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. Adoption. As I said, I've been orphaned twice, and I've been adopted twice. I was adopted almost at birth when Dick and Eileen Tome adopted me into the Tome family. And by the way, I never say they are my adoptive parents. No, they're just my parents. It's my father and my mother. And when you are adopted and your identity is in that new family, you operate as a treasured child. Adoption can oftentimes, we think, be traumatic. Adoption is never traumatic. We heard a great story last week from Kim Botter. How cool was that for her to open up her life and family, you know? Wow, amazing. Two different girls, Anastasia and Sasha, both adopted, both utterly different realms of understanding being in the Botto family. This is the way it is for us. You could be adopted in God's family, yet still operate as an abandoned orphan. And we hear about some of these adoption stories, we think, oh man, adoption is hard. Yes, it can be difficult. We need to enter into adopting or foster caring with all sobriety, totally. But let's be real clear. Adoption isn't a difficult thing. It's only difficult sometimes because someone's been abandoned. Adoption is rough. Being abandoned is rough. And so the tensions that we have with God, the tensions of trusting God, the tensions of why is God this way? Why is not that? I can't do this. I can't trust God. Is because we felt so long like being abandoned that we can't rest in this treasureness. And it doesn't all help either when you've come to understand Jesus in the midst of an orphan mindset, which was me. People who tried to grow me in who Jesus was were operating off an orphan paradigm. Obey the Ten Commandments so God will like you. Tithe so God doesn't smite you. You know, don't do this so God will answer your prayers. God, you know, God's making lists, checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty and not. You know, all these, well, that was Santa Claus. Well, whoever that is, you know, Santa Claus actually fits right into it. I mean, you can come to understand Jesus, but if your framework of that sort of religious context is one of duty, performance, all that stuff, you will still operate as an orphan who goes before God and says, please, God, give me some gruel. Can I have some nice gruel? You'll operate as Oliver Twist with no joy, no passion, no sense of freedom. See, this is why we're not talking about how different religions fit together. The gospel is different than different religions. The gospel is called the good news of Jesus Christ, which doesn't say work your system well and God will approve you, which doesn't say if you do this, you can get the brass ring, which doesn't say enlighten yourself, which doesn't say improve yourself. It tells you you were adopted outside of your works. It tells you that the grace of God brings you into a loving relationship that is not dependent on your performance. Man, I'll tell you what, this is really hard to get. I mean, I understand that this is the no-brainer teaching of the Bible. In case you're wondering, this is not like some errant thing in the Bible. You might not like the Bible, understand it. I'm just telling you, this is the through line throughout the entire thing. And even when there's certain things that are difficult in the Bible, it's there to set it up for this thing. This is not a variant understanding. This is the entire message. This is the entire context. And some of us are just going to struggle receiving it. I talked with a friend of mine this last week who's my heroic dad. I mean, if I could be a dad like this guy, I wish I was. And he's got one child that he's always had a hard relationship with him. And I said, well, why do you think that is? And he doesn't really know. Maybe it's something in a traumatic event in the past. Maybe it's simply his DNA is not as, maybe there's something in our DNA that makes us not as trusting. Some people's other, don't know. And I don't understand why some of us, we're going to hear this today, and we might walk out of here, and it's just a game changer. Like, click, got it. Wow. Some of us are going to go, yeah, got it. But then the next day, we're going to fall back into orphan thinking. Me, I fall into orphan thinking all the time. I have to constantly remind myself of this. I'll give you some examples I've been taking note of over the last period of time. When is it that I've been operating as an orphan? Every day when I come into the office, I notice that I get more joy coming in earlier and being one of the first cars in the parking lot than coming in later and being one of the last cars. See, when I'm in there earlier, I get on my truck all happy. Yes, I'm in work early. Earlier than you, you are a loser. You will be impressed with my work ethic, you know. And then when I come in a little later, even if I've got good reason to come in later, I'm coming in like, I hope someone noticed. I hope no one noticed that my truck wasn't here this morning. I hope someone asked me why I came in at 9:30 today instead. I hope that because that was a great reason. I had an early, you know. I think these things. See, as an orphan, people's perception of me is important. People's perception of me is important. I take a long extended break every summer or even every vacation. When I take a vacation or a break, when I come back, I feel like, okay, now starts a new period. I have to pass or fail right now. I have to be diligent right now. It's not like I just took a break. Now I've got to justify why I took a break. That's what an orphan thinks. I was in a meeting out in Seattle last week with some pastors, about 10, 12 pastors. We were thinking about what does the future of ministry in America look like in the 21st century and beyond. And it's been a really good group. I'm meeting with them 3 times over the next 18 months. And I just happened to find out in this group that I'm what's called the B group. I'm in the B group. I heard that and went, who's in the A group? And, you know, I did a little thing and I thought to myself, why am I not in the A group? In fact, I've outperformed. My thing is bigger than all those sons of bitches. Why am I not in the A group? Why am I? Sometimes you shouldn't actually put voice to what you're thinking, right? So I started joking around with this. So I just went, wait a minute. And the guy said, oh, no. It's not really the A team and B team. It's just you're in the second group. I went, okay, why am I not in the first group? Now, I was really kind of fooling around and kidding with them, but you know, the reason we can think things and be witty is because there's a kernel of truth that we believe inside that enables us to have the funny line to begin with. So as an orphan, I'm constantly going, am I at the somebody table or am I at the nobody table? Where am I? As an orphan, I'm noticing that. This last week, I had a person who I've known for a long, long time, fam, been very close with, actually built in them significantly, and I found out this last week that they're leaving Crossroads, going to go elsewhere. Now, as a treasured child, I would hear that, and when I'm operating in my identity as a treasured child, I would say, man, what a blessing they've been. I'm excited that they're being grown elsewhere. Because as a treasured child, I also realize there's people from other churches who come to Crossroads, even though we've never designed it that way, we've never had that as a goal. There's people who've come from other churches because God wanted you here, because you rolled up your sleeves and have contributed, and you're helping make the vision go forward instead of just warming a seat here. And when there's a lot of people who've been like that, and I go, yeah, that's great, that's awesome. And you would think it wouldn't bother me when someone leaves here to go elsewhere, especially given how many people are here. But as an orphan, I hear that and I immediately go, oh, I'm a loser. What did I do to offend them? Gosh, I'm a treasured child. That wouldn't so much matter. When I'm on my game and I'm interacting with a professional, a healthcare professional that handles our family stuff, I find out this healthcare professional is not happy about certain things. And as an abandoned orphan, I would think, oh, if you don't like the way our family's doing this or that, we got to convince you that it's okay. But in the interaction as a treasured child, I was like, man, I feel like all these situations are unfortunate, but man, I feel God approves me and He understands. And I don't need to verify. He approves, He understands. When I'm in a meeting, when you leave a meeting, what's your thoughts about when you leave the meeting? Abandoned orphans will always think through, what was in them? What did I say? Now, what did I say? When I say, ooh, what did he think when I say that? You know, when I'm operating as a treasured child, I leave meeting, the meeting's over. Let me get ready for the next one. I don't have to keep rethinking my mind if someone misinterpreted or someone didn't like or something. I could go on and on and on about how these responses will affect whether or not you find yourself rooted firmly in one camp or the other. So Jesus has this best day of his life. Best day of his life. And he immediately goes from there into a time of temptation. He immediately goes and has 40 days of fasting. And I've been to this place where they believe this is, in the Jordan River, and then in a massive cliff, wilderness, rocky area, you know, right beside it. He goes there for 40 days. Here's what it says. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil, and after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. Really? Gosh, I'm glad they told me that. That's really helpful. And the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. But he answered, it's written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Jesus goes and he does 40 days of fasting. This story is given other times in the Bible. It's actually 40 days without food and without water. Human beings can go 40 days without food. We can't go 40 days without water. The Bible understands these things. All the people who wrote these things down, they understood that, especially in the arid Mid-East. So they're not saying, it's not like, see, Bible's full of errors. Like, they would know that. No, the writers of the Bible know this. But they're doing this showing that not only is Jesus man, but only God himself could go without water for 40 days. It's impossible to go without water for 40 days. So Jesus, on all levels, is struggling. He is engaged. He's wrestling. And he comes up toe-to-toe with Satan, with the adversary, called here the tempter, who gives him three core temptations. We're covering one today. I'll cover the other two next week. Every temptation you have in your life will fit into one of these three categories. The temptation for appetite, the temptation for approval, the temptation of ambition. Appetite, approval, ambition. Anything you do that grieves the heart of God, anything you do that's coming out of an orphan mentality, anything, ultimately traces back to one of these three macro filters. Appetite, approval, ambition. So Jesus has everything stripped away from his life for 40 days. All he has is him and his identity. That's all he has. He's got none of the trappings of what makes him him, none of the trappings of divinity, none of the trappings of being a blue carpenter laborer, none of these things. All he has is his identity that's been very clearly communicated to him, that you are a treasured child. You are a son. And so when Satan comes to him and says, hey, turn these stones into bread, it's really not on a level of, boy, aren't you hungry? Don't you fill up your stomach? It's deeper than that. That's just the entrance into the ultimate temptation, which is deny your identity. If you're the Son of God, come on, Jesus, really, really, you're really the Son, come on. You're really a treasured child? Really, really, come on. Okay, well, let's verify it. If you are, show your power right now. Unleash your appetite to tap into the things you can do as divine that nobody else can do. And this is what our appetites do. Our appetites draw us into the identity of that object instead of the identity of God. And you don't really know what your identity is in until you fast from your appetite. You don't really know. We have on the table here just a number of different appetites. You know, some of us are just loving like little salt crackers or sweets or cakes or whatever. And cakes and crackers and sweets, none of those are inherently wrong. And it's not even wrong necessarily to overeat every once in a while. But why is it that some of us man, it is our comfort food. We're feeling down. We've got to go to the fridge. We've got to do this. It's really not that we have a discipline problem, though. I mean, that's part of how we talk about it. It's really that we've got an orphan problem. We've got a hole of loneliness. Something doesn't feel right, and so our appetite for food is the thing that we use to placate us. Food's the easy one. We all know that one. That's certainly good. But there's other ones. I think they're good. You can work out. And you know, there is a line. There is a line between, what is the line? I don't even know what it is, but I know there is one. A line between being fit and functional and being a narcissist. I mean, there is. You know, if you work out, great, wonderful. But let's all admit, there comes a point where you say, okay, am I doing this really because I want to have a full life, or has this really become my identity? I'm the fit guy at age 50 with a 32 waist. You know, I'm the chick who had four babies, and I am hot. Thank you very much. Now, what is our core? And you don't know if your identity is fitness guy. You don't know that your identity is needing to eat food until you go for a period of time. And you say, I'm not going to have it. We have all kind of other things that that we use. Yes, all kinds of things. Now, is there anything inherently wrong with alcohol? I don't believe there is. There's nothing inherently wrong with alcohol. But have you ever, by the way, this is not real alcohol. This is apple juice and coffee. And I tell you that not because, you know, I don't want to bum you out, because I bum people out because I've had a real beer on stage before and all that kind of stuff. I didn't want to take three shots before 12 o'clock noon. So that's my main thing. And some of you would be so bothered by the fact that I had a shot that you wouldn't hear anything I would say. So let's just eliminate that right now. It's fake, all right? But nonetheless, some of us, this is what fills the hole. We wouldn't say my identity is alcohol. We wouldn't say that. But we really can't feel okay unless we're having it. We'll say, well, I don't need alcohol. I don't need alcohol. I just like it. Okay, fine. How long have you gone without alcohol? You ever gone a week without alcohol? You ever gone 40 days without alcohol? That's why boyfriends, girlfriends, these are appetites that we have. You know, many people just go from boyfriend to boyfriend, girlfriend to girlfriend. They have such an appetite to feel from somebody closeness. It's actually why sex is such a big deal outside of marriage for many of us. Sex is the closest we get to intimacy, even if it's with the second person of the month. It's the way we feel validated. Whereas a treasured child says, no, God validates me. God is the one that treasures me. God is the one that gives my identity, not this guy's approval of me. God. I mean, the number of things that are here are unending. I have a friend of mine, guy I know. I've ridden motorcycles with him before. And he said something I thought was like really telling. He said to me, he said, if there's not a chance of death, it's not fun for me. And he does things like skiing over crevasses in Switzerland, weird, crazy stuff. Like, yeah, the exact quote, if there's not a chance of death, it's not fun for me. He has an appetite for adventure. He has an appetite. These things, they go on and on. And again, none of these things are inherently wrong. None of these things. But our appetite for them can communicate that there is something wrong with our identity. It's the actions of an abandoned orphan. This last week, I fasted from two things. I fasted from food, and I fasted from motorcycles. The food actually wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, I've gone 10 days before, so that wasn't a big deal. And just, if you haven't figured out, I'm starting to seed you with ideas of a fast I'm asking you to have this week, for whatever period of time or for whatever that you want. But this last week, I did that. The food wasn't that big of a deal. Motorcycles was a bigger deal. And it wasn't just because it was bad weather, but riding is the only part of my thing. It's going on to blogs. It's finding used gear. It's planning a trip that's 4 months out. It is having conversations with people I know are friends. It's kind of the lead conversation. Hey, did you hear about this? So I fastened that. No motorcycle talk, no motorcycle websites, no wrenching my motorcycle, no maintaining my motorcycle, no nothing. And I'll tell you what, I realized that that's more of a temptation for my identity than food. Fortunately, I was able to do it, so I told myself, okay, no, I'm good. It's kind of whatever. But nonetheless, it was healthy for me. It was healthy for me to go through the process And what would it be that you would need to be tested on to verify for yourself that, no, I am a treasured child of God? Because Jesus ultimately says no to all three of these things, and what he learns is, no, I am a treasured child. I didn't need these things. But we just don't know until we try taking something away. The Inquirer a couple weeks ago had a story on how, unfortunately, a third of Cincinnatians are obese, another third are overweight, so two-thirds of our city is very unhealthy. And here's what one of the people is quoted as saying. You don't realize you have a problem. If you don't realize you have a problem, you can't fix it. Talk about people who just don't think it's a problem, don't realize they're overweight, this or that. If you don't realize you have a problem, and if you don't realize you have a problem with any appetite, entertainment, being well-read, here's another one. A lot of us are well-read. We have an appetite to be a voracious learner. Why? Because our identity is the answer guy. Our identity is having diplomas on the wall. And if you don't know that that is your core identity and you're performing according to that, then you really can't get over to operating as a treasured child. And the only way you know is if you strip it away, if you take it away, if you live without that. Digital media, social media, Facebooking, texting. It used to be that we just lamented it as Americans that we had a hard time with television. Gosh, if only that was our problem. Man, if I got 15 spare seconds, I'm like, putting it away. Oh, I'm putting it away, you know, all these things. Some of us, this is our appetite to be known, our appetite to be seen, our appetite to do anything to fill our minds other than just being with ourselves. When is the last time you were alone with yourself, with no digital, no media, no sound? You were fine just being alone. Like, what would I do? Nothing. You would sit there. You would sit there and think, or you would pray, or whatever. Interesting article I read recently. Rick Riley, the great sports columnist from Sports Illustrated, he has a son who I guess is following his footsteps of being a really intriguing columnist. He went 90 days without any social media. No Facebook, no texting, no internet, no cell phone. This isn't some old curmudgeon-y guy. It's like a 20-something-year-old guy. He had some fascinating conclusions he came to. Here's what he says. I think that Facebook is the biggest waste of time because everyone is just presenting such a filtered picture of themselves. You only put up your best pictures. People only check in when they are at the fanciest restaurant in the city. They only keep things up there that are flattering to themselves. I just think it's like keeping up with the Joneses, but for life. You're never going to get on top of it. Someone's always going to have a better job than you, go on better vacations than you, have a better looking wife than you, or whatever it is. So it's superficiality on top of superficiality. You never get to see the real parts of people. I'm not anti-Facebook at all, not at all. But I think it's interesting, the reason this guy had these insights, it's true, isn't it? Like, whoever puts on Facebook, I just supersized my fries. I mean, no one does, right? We don't know. Whoever puts on there, I got fired for a bad work ethic. No one puts that on there, you know? I mean, it's just like, but, you know, all of a sudden you read that and you go, oh, wow, you had that major clarity. He had that clarity because he went without. He fasted without. I'm encouraging you this week to go without. Pick something and say, I'm not going to do that. And you're sitting there going, well, certainly you don't expect me to. Yes, that one exactly. That one right there. Here's a crazy one. I'm into eating healthily. Wonderful, wonderful. But some of you, the health thing, that's sort of your identity. That's how you feel good about yourself. That's how you feel like you're a person. Eat unhealthy for a week. Seriously, people do it all the time and they haven't died yet. Try it. I'm dead serious. Do it for a whole week. How do you feel if this core part of your identity isn't there? See, Jesus had everything stripped away so he could dial in and make sure, yes, I am a treasured child of God. I'm telling you what, when you come to a place where you live in the realm of a treasured child of God, my goodness, that's the game changer. That is the thing that takes us to new places. And Pascal, the great French mathematician, talks about all of us having a God-shaped hole that's inside of us. We either try to jam our alcohol, our Cheez-Its, our dumbbells, our sex, our accomplishments, our businesses, whatever inside of it, and it won't work. Abandoned orphans will never have enough because only God can fit that. Here's what his longer context quote says. What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace? This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are. Though none can help, since this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God himself. I'm not talking about giving up something for Lent. I actually think that's a good thing if someone gives it up for Lent. I mean, at least we're saying no to ourselves. That's good on any level. But you can give something up for Lent and be 100% orphan. You can give something up for Lent and you're really working your religious system and trying to get God's approval because you gave something up for Lent. You can give something up for Lent and you're actually bolstering the false god of self-discipline. I feel good about myself. I'm disciplined about myself. You can give up something for Lent and just naturally have it come out in conversation so people realize, I'm a loser, you must not be because you're doing that thing. So, well, you can give something up for Lent and it still be a healthy exercise, but just about every time I hear somebody talk about that, I'm going, yeah, this is not what Jesus did. It was a stripping of the way, and every time he was hungry, or this week, every time you're hungry, or every time you're horny, or every time you need an adventure, or every time you need to buy a new article of clothing, or every time you need to do another mile on the treadmill, you ask yourself, am I thirsting and hungering more for this thing that's a false identity, or am I thirsting for the presence of God? Am I hungry for God and hungry for my identity as a treasured child, or am I hungry for the counterfeit starches that will pass away the next time I go to the restroom? This is the depth in what Jesus did. And it's a depth that you may encounter this week. God, I thank you for spelling reality out for us. And I know that my mere words has really not brought us to reality. These need to be lived out. The information is good, but the transformation still must come. So I pray for every person here as we undertake this challenge that you would meet them. Meet them not as orphans who are proving something, but as treasured children. In fact, some of us came in here as an orphan. The reality is, not just did we feel like one, but we actually were. And perhaps today something different is broken in and we've been feeling your adoption process, that you are adopting us right now. We want to receive that. Perhaps we just say right now in words that make sense, God, come into my life. Spirit, enter. I want to give my life to you, Jesus. Others of us have done that before, but man, we just operate too much like an orphan. We want to get rid of those old habits. Teach us.